Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Hello, this is Game On, and I'm Adam Rosser, and this week we're going to be talking about Roblox, something which sort of crept up on me until very recently, but has been around for quite some time. With me to talk about it is Andy Robertson from Family Gamer TV. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Adam. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Very well. And tell me, when did you first become aware of Roblox?
I think it was like you, actually. It wasn't until my kids started playing it that I realised, you know, quite how big it was. It did pop up when it came to Xbox, because there was kind of like a news cycle about it. I did write something. But it wasn't until I sort of saw my son playing it, I realised it was something of a phenomenon. And it really is unlike any other game that we play anyway.
Because it's not authored content, or rather it is authored, but it's authored by the community, isn't it?
Yeah, so it has a very young feel. So it's kind of like a sandbox sort of make your own game type setup with the physics all provided for you. But then the way these games are put together, obviously it's a quite clever interface, because kids and, I guess, older people are coming up with games that you don't see on the shelves of game stores. So really unusual topics, like maybe you're just running a factory, or maybe you're delivering pizza, or maybe you're trying to survive a wave of different disasters. And it feels like this kind of games that kids play in the playground, but brought into a console or on your PC.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That kind of make-believe space, which is allowed in something which I'm told, and this is what we'll come to in just a moment, because I've been speaking to some of the people from Roblox, was a physics simulator. And then it got out of control, or it became something more. That's remarkable, isn't it? This thing that starts off as a physics simulator is now worth however much money, with 900,000 concurrent users. Incredible.
Yeah, and the people making the games are making a lot of money out of it as well. So I think some people have sort of, Roblox talk about it as if they're supporting themselves through sort of education. But actually now those people are a bit older, they're probably just full-time Roblox game designers. And it does feel like, I'm not sure which came first, whether it was the kind of the realization that the community was creating some amazing content, or whether it was the sort of the tool they created. But I guess kind of lightning struck, and it has just grown. And I think probably there's some wisdom in the people behind Roblox. I know the directors, David Baszucki, who I've talked to a couple of times, were quite hands-off with it and let the community sort of do what they wanted to. I think other companies might have been a bit more controlling, a bit more concerned about where this might go. But actually, that kind of free hand of the community has turned up some really interesting content and some unusual games.
Well, Grace Francisco and Tammy Barmick from Roblox were in town because they had an event at the Google offices in central London, and I went to meet them. Grace Francisco, you're the Vice President of Developer Relations at Roblox. Hello, Grace.
Hello.
And Tammy, I'm going to say that wrong, Tammy.
Tammy Barmick,
and you're the VP of Marketing. But you're in London for a very particular reason. You're not just here to speak to journalists. You're here because the weekend coming up, you've got 100 developers meeting.
We do. We have about 100 developers that are coming into London all over Europe to learn about best practices from our Roblox engineering team, as well as to meet their friends that they've known for a number of years on the Roblox platform.
When you talk about best practices, that's not simply the best way to use the platform, is it? That must be about the way that you're making, the things that you're making has to be part of that, doesn't it?
It does. So we're constantly releasing new features on our platform. So it's an opportunity to share some of those new features that we're releasing. But more than anything, the creators that are creating these games share best practices with each other. And they learn about new techniques, and they share new offerings that they've learned about.
But you're not just curating a game, you're also creating a community, aren't you?
Absolutely. So my team is developer relations, and we work with the community actively every day. And when we talk about best practices, we're also talking about, you know, what are monetization best practices, game mechanics that are specific to success on the Roblox platform. And so that's something that we share with our community, and the community shares with each other. And it's been such a vibrant, active community. They help each other out. And, you know, we're really looking forward to meeting them at this event. A lot of them have been on the platform for quite some time.
You're talking about the developer community there, aren't you?
Absolutely.
And I might be thinking of the other community, the 900,000 concurrent users, or roughly 900,000 concurrent users. And how many actual people are playing the game?
Actually, we have 56 million monthly active players on our platform. And we have 1.9 million developers that have developed a game on platform. Any given month, we have over 800,000 developers actively developing games on the platform. We're a 100% user-generated content platform for Roblox and our beginnings 11 years ago. We started out wanting to teach physics to kids, and our founders quickly realized that the curriculum that they were developing was not as inventive and creative as some of the kids. So user-generated content and Roblox was born.
That process of being engaged with developers and with the wider community has been there really since the outset.
It's absolutely our DNA. Having embracing user-generated content is the point of view that we enter into every decision that we make.
When I first worked for the BBC in the business department, people were still using the phrase the information superhighway. And they were talking about this thing which will revolutionise the way that we worked. 11 years ago, we're only talking about, 2006 for full launch. Habbo Hotel was still a very big thing. Moshi Monsters hadn't really happened by that point. And unfortunately, Moshi Monsters has now crested and gone because they didn't engage with their user base and they didn't allow them that kind of freedom. And do you think that's part of the reason why Roblox has strengthened rather than weakened over time?
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons why Roblox has really taken off. And we're seeing trends in other areas and categories that are just realizing now that the power is within user-generated content. It's how young people are ingesting their entertainment and their media now with the advent of YouTube and Snap and BuzzFeed. It's all user-generated content. And so we've really embraced the power of UGC. So that is definitely one of the reasons why Roblox is finding incredible rampant success, but also because we are completely cross-platform agnostic. So you can play on iOS, Android. We also just announced about a year and a half ago Xbox support. We have been the number one download free game on Xbox for consistently for the last year and a half. We're a top downloaded iPad app as well as Android Play Store. So we've removed the barriers to play. Kids can play with their friends no matter what device they're on and no matter what platform they're on around the world.
Okay. How difficult a sell is that to Xbox and to Apple? Because they're known to be curating their own platforms and their own communities. And you say to them, yeah, this game is going to come to you if that's okay. And, oh, yeah, everybody who's playing on every other device is going to play in the same space. Is there any pushback when you make that suggestion?
You know, the partnership with both Apple and Android and Microsoft has been very, very strong. And they've been very supportive with all of our initiatives. And I think that they realize that our platform is unique because it does embrace user-generated content. And the numbers don't lie. So they're seeing the numbers come to them, and the more you know we grow, the more we embrace the uniqueness of the partnership.
How do you vet, Grace? How do you vet the things that are offered to you? What are the kind of standards that people have to hit?
In terms of creating content on the platform, we don't actually vet that content. We provide guidance to them because we're not in a position to say, you know, one piece of content is better than the other. Really, the success of our platform, back to the UGC point, is that they really know better. They know their audience really well. And so they're playing, they're creating imaginative experiences based on that. We as adults, you know, are a little bit too far removed to be able to judge, hey, you know, having a pizza place, that's crazy. Why would anyone ever do that? In fact, that is one of our most popular games. And so we don't get into the business of telling them what's going to be better than the next thing. If they come to us with their ideas, we help them with the underlying, you know, game mechanics and underlying monetization pieces, but they really are in charge of that entire creative experience.
My daughter was this morning when I left the house working in a supermarket, bagging groceries and then hitting the things and earning herself, I think it was $1,301 inside the game of the game currency, not of Robux, obviously, the game currency. And then I noticed that the house that she was building had outstanding bills of $300. So there's this kind of, she's in somebody's server space building a house, and that must cost them money. And there's this dynamic relationship between all of these components that I hadn't really realized. This is not like Minecraft or Sims, is it?
No, it's not at all. People like to compare us to Minecraft, but this is a much more immersive, creative experience than you would get in Minecraft. And by and large, some of these experiences, like working at a pizza place, is actually teaching some practical skills to kids. My kids love that game, and so they were spending some time in the manager's room trying to understand, what does it take to become a manager? That was so important to them. I was so impressed that they were taking the time to figure that out.
Some of those games, Tammy, are harnessing that whole playing at being a shopkeeper type of role-playing stuff. But nobody decided at the outset that a physics game was going to be ending up teaching people about working and funding a house and paying for this and playing together and actually being social in quite constrained ways. Unusual outcome, isn't it?
We like to call the Roblox the social platform for play. And we came about that as an evolutionary process by letting our users drive the direction. So we have a really wide variety. I mean, you can find any experience from role-playing games to, you know, traditional gameplays to educational games where maybe you're learning about government, how government works. So it's not necessarily all about monetization. It's about embracing the imagination of these creators. That said, we do have creators that are making significant money. In fact, one of our top developers is on route this year to make $3 million this year. We have two developers that are on track to make $2 million. And our payout in general this year is on track to hit $30 million in payouts. And we really believe that we want to give back to our creator community monetarily to celebrate their creative successes.
This is that moment when the Robux becomes US dollars through PayPal. There's that relationship. Yes. I haven't had to, but I've given into my daughter's desire for Robux, and I've set limits on exactly how much she can have. How common is that experience for a parent to turn around and find themselves thinking, what is this money actually being spent on? Who am I giving this to? I mean, how much, not exactly pushback, but how much concern do you feel from the person standing over the shoulder of the person who's playing your game?
I mean, I think that we have a lot of levers for parents to decide what's right for their families. So in terms of personal decision-making on spend, and also what they allow their kids to experience, we have levers that parents can turn off chat altogether, curate games for those children that are under the age of 13. We have a curated game list. They can chat with everyone or no one. And then as far as the Robux are concerned, hopefully we look at it as a partnership with parents. We hope that the parents are really involved with what their kids are doing, and then they can manage that process. But I also think it's a learning and a responsibility lesson for kids as well to realize that Robux are not unlimited and that you have to be judicious in your spend. The data that we have, actually, 50% of parents actually play with their kids on Roblox. And so what we find is that we like to think that we're providing a platform for building relationships. A lot of the creators that create games show their parents what they've built. And it's and we liken it to what you build at school, you buy it, you build a bowl and you want to bring it home and you want to show your parents because you're proud of it and you get that satisfaction.
So Tammy, 11 years in, 56 million users. What are the plans for expansion? I mean, on the table opposite us are a whole set of actual things that you can buy. This is the 16-point articulation style model that came in a couple of years ago rather than the 5 or 6-point articulation model you had. So there's development there. There were the new surface packs that was brought in a couple of years ago so to improve the textures. So what we're looking at is sort of an organic evolution of the game.
So there are a few things that we're doing within game. We're constantly updating new features to improve the overall experience. In fact, 2 weeks ago, we just released a new lighting feature that our developers are using to enhance the overall quality and look and feel of the games. And what we expect is that the quality of games are going to start rivaling some AAA content that's out there eventually. So we're excited about that. At the beginning of this year, we dipped our toe in the water. Remember, we are 100% user-generated content. Roblox doesn't create any games. all of our developers do. So we dipped our toe in the water in terms of licensing, and we partnered with a company called Jazzwares to produce a line of action figures. We announced it in February. We were blown away by the response. We sold out immediately in Toys R Us. We were hot on demand, and in Toys R Us, they put us in the front hot and new section, which is unheard of for an unknown brand that goes into Toys R Us. As part of that, to feed the ecosystem from digital to physical back to digital, we have virtual codes. Our redemption rate for our virtual codes, believe it or not, is 50%, which is unheard of. Normally, it's single digits. But what that says to us is that the user base, the players, know the value of those physical items lies within the virtual items.
Tammy, one of the things that I've seen happening quite a lot is this Toys to Life and this interaction between the physical and the online. Any desire to make that kind of real world into the virtual world happen more inside Roblox, or is that open to people who are out there and having those kinds of ideas?
Yeah, in fact, we really embrace that. In fact, we just coined a term, Roblox Ready. And what Roblox Ready means is taking the physical product and bringing it back into the virtual world. Pretty soon, that line is blurring between the virtual world and the physical world. And, you know, our goal at Roblox is really to make sure that the imagination is embraced. So wherever young people are playing and imagining, that's where we want to be. So whether it be in the 3D immersive environment online, or whether it be in the physical space and they're imagining with play, physical play, we want to make sure that it's easy to cross into either world.
Hence the launch of the VR set of the Roblox experience.
So given the fact that we're cross-platform supportive, VR is an important experience into that immersive world.
Grace, with these 100 people who are going to be assembling at the YouTube space at the weekend, what do you want to see? What's the thing that you want to see there? What's the thing you want to come out of it?
What I want to see at RDC, as we've seen in San Jose, is just the community coming together, the energy. It's always so exciting to see at this event because, and this is such a youthful developer audience, the youngest developer segment I've ever worked with, and it's really impressive how entrepreneurial, how energetic and passionate they are about building on the Roblox platform. And so I'm excited about just seeing that and continuing to share what we've been doing in terms of improvements on the platform, our modeling, our physics engine. Those are all things that we're really excited to share with them.
When you've got that amount of energy in your user base and in your developer base, Tammy, does it make it easy to come to work?
I don't even look at it as work. I pinch myself every day for being able to work with this community. I've never worked with a more passionate employee base, because it really is about embracing creativity and imagination. We live that every day at work, and we see it every day with our user base, our players, and our creators.
Well, that's Grace Francisco and Tammy Barmick, and I met them a couple of weeks ago. Andy, just before we played that tape, you talked about the fact that Roblox were quite hands-off. And I found myself in that interview, and I might even have mentioned it, talking about Moshi Monsters and the fact that that was a phenomenon which peaked and went away, whereas Roblox seems to have come at it from the other side. It's something which has not had curated content and hasn't had the hand of a developer. They're both catering, or they seem to have been catering for a similar age group, although Roblox is sort of trending a little bit older, I think. And one has stalled and the other one hasn't. Is that because of this content gap that you had with Moshi Monsters, which people are filling of their own volition in Roblox?
Yeah, I think there's a sense of ownership here. That's the kind of the differential. Rather than Moshi Monsters being owned by the company and delivered to you and you then consume it, I think Roblox very much is a sense that these are other kids, other people like me, you know, like our children, who are making the content. There's obviously a lot of support that happens behind the scenes to make these games possible. And also, I'm sure there's quite a lot of checking of content, so that what we see bubble to the top of popularity is the content that is suitable. I'm sure there's all sorts of, you know, stuff that gets struck off the list for having rude items in it, or swear words, or, you know, actual content that is copyrighted. So although they're hands off, I guess there is a bit of curation behind the scenes. But I think it comes down to the players feeling like they have the ownership of this space and it's their game.
Emulation of other games is something that happens in Roblox, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what, you know, raised it on my radar, I think, because I was watching one of my sons play a game in it, and it was quite clearly they liked it because they were into Splatoon at the time, and they liked this Roblox game. It wasn't actually called Splatoon. It's probably called something very similar, but it used similar imagery and a similar gameplay mechanics. It was a paintball game, but it was obviously trying to look like Splatoon, and they liked it because of that. And it felt like there was an interesting space here that the companies who own this IP are obviously tolerating the fact that they're popping up on Roblox. They must know about it. And in a similar way to their content appearing on YouTube, there's kind of a, you know, a quid pro quo kind of thing going on, that there's some popularity being raised. But it's new territory. And so quite where the lines are going to fall, I think we're still yet to see.
With the Family Gamer TV strand, which you create, Andy, one of the things that you talk about quite a lot is parents should be involved in the gaming that their children are engaging with. And I have to admit, I was a bit lax when it came to that with Roblox. And you're right to say that it's a very open environment. Is there any cause for concern there that you've seen?
There were some very long-standing characters in the game that I think were controlled by the Roblox Corporation. And I think there were some strange messages that got triggered, and it caused some concern in the community. Where were the limits to who was communicating with who? But Roblox were very clear and came out and were saying, you know, that it's all checked. The communication between players is similar to what you'd get on an Xbox Live game. So I think there's no cause for concern here more than elsewhere. But that same rule, I think, applies, that if your child is enjoying a space, then to understand it properly, you need to go into that experience with them. And my experience of that is that often the kids actually quite like it. I think parents often think, oh, they don't want me around. They like to play on their own. That's true to a point. But often kids like to share and to tell you and to show you what they're doing. And in Roblox, because it's quite open and because kids can be quite inventive with how they play it, my kids are like often say, Dad, look, I found this little glitch, or I found this secret way out of prison here, or I've made friends with these other players. And so I think playing together, there's no kind of replacement for it.
My one's currently building houses. It's her current thing is to look at houses in online and then go and replicate them in the game. And it's amazing the amount of fidelity she can get with just three stories to play with. I'm a bit surprised that she's doing a job inside a supermarket, and that's just peculiar. But that's the spaces they've got to play in, or rather that's the spaces other people have built for them. Do you think we're going to see more of these kinds of open worlds, or is an open world, a true open world like this, a true sandbox, almost too much of an offer for an established publisher to make?
Well, there are examples, aren't there, that have been similar, but I don't think have been quite as popular with this age group. So Little Big Planet has a big following of people who make the levels. Because of the complexity there, it's kind of prohibitive to younger creators. And we had Disney Infinity Toy Box. Obviously, that's kind of gone by the by. But again, that was very similar, and offering a space where people could create games. So I think that there is an appeal to this, because if you create something that's this popular, the value in it is kind of secondary. It's almost like a Facebook. If you can get the eyeballs and the attention of children, then obviously you've got an opportunity to advertise where that's appropriate, and you've got other ways to make revenue from that might not be obvious in the short term. So I'm sure big games companies are looking at this as a space that's emerging. And Roblox's success won't have gone unnoticed.
And they themselves, of course, have just moved into figures and blind boxes and all of that kind of stuff. So they're trying to monetize it in a very direct kind of way.
Yep, and there's a sort of usual crossover way in those toys. You get little codes that unlock stuff in the game. It's kind of light touch. There's no kind of forcing you to get these toys in the way that Skylanders sometimes feels like it's doing, but the toys are there. And again, I guess it's because of that kind of mind share that they know it's popular, and so they can have a licensee come in, and they're now into the sort of second wave of these toys that you can collect.
As this is broadcast, I'm in Germany at the Gamescom festival, but you're not going, Andy. What are you up to?
No, I'll be at the Greenbelt festival, which is actually an arts festival, but they've invited me to come and exhibit a whole load of unusual video games. Now, you may have seen on Twitter, I've been collecting Move controllers. Did you spot that?
I did. The rather beautiful rainbow of Move controllers you arranged.
That's right. So usually you can only have 7 of these attached to a PlayStation to play a game. But I've got a Raspberry Pi set up it's kind of a game of tag that you can have up to 16 of these Move controllers, and they all light up. And so it's a team game that we'll be playing at this arts festival. Along with that, we're also, for parents and on a more mature level, exhibiting a Minecraft map created by Adam Clark and his wife, who's a poet. His wife wrote a poem about her mother, who had terminal cancer. And Adam created, with an Arts Council funding, this Minecraft map. And you go through the map and you experience the poem. And so it's in an art setting, it's quite an unusual way to engage an older audience with both Minecraft, but also how video games can actually offer something more, you know, than just entertainment.
And when and where is that?
So that is Green Belt Festival, and that is 25th to 28th of August, and up in Boughton House on beautiful grounds, sort of sculpted architectural lawns, and you can camp if you like, and that's in Northampton.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Andy. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.